Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Today is Thursday, December 6th, 2018. We're organizing a Philadelphia area Christmas afternoon snacks. It's going to be 1:45 p.m. somewhere in the Malvern area on Friday, December 21st. I'm still negotiating for the location, so we will send it out next week as soon as we have the address to those who signed up. You can just go into the homepage and click on Tea with Catherine, and you'll go right there. Make sure if you're coming to read our event policies. Very important. That's right. Christmas is coming. Give the Gift mailing has started after Thanksgiving. So we invite you to give a complimentary 60-day subscription to the Salieri Report to the person of your choice for Christmas. You can see the full commentary on the homepage. It's great because this gets them the 2018 annual wrap-up, including the news, trends, and stories, our big equity overview, and then the theme. And it'll come complete with web presentations. And of course, they can access everything in the Salieri Report and download as much as they want. So the person of your choice will receive it by the third week in December. Just send the name and address and phone number, email address by December 17th, or feel free to call customer service at 866-311-2543. Again, if you haven't looked at it, the second quarter wrap-up PDF is up, and of course, premium subscribers automatically got their hard copies. If you don't want to be a premium subscriber, you can get the individual hard copies at the store. I got several questions about Christmas gift ideas, and so I wrote a commentary this week and posted it. You can find it on Salieri.com, the homepage, Ask Catherine Christmas Gift Ideas. It's under What's New, and it's also under By Catherine. That includes our 2016 prayer book. We've reissued it in it as a generic no date. It's a great stuffing stocker, so feel free when you contact us to just send it to prayers@salieri.com and let us know how many you want. We'll mail them out to you. Our theme tonight is Cotton Candy Land. It's the name of a book review that I wrote of Nick Brady's book, autobiography, Way of Going. It's linked in the recommended reading links in tonight's Money and Market commentary. Let me just read the last few paragraphs. I read an elegant description of a remarkable life in which gentlemen were strategic in their thinking, kept their deals, and magically the good guys made millions and ran the country by picking the right allies at Yale, on Wall Street, in the oil patch, and because times were good and they were lucky. Truly, this is a wonderful book to give your grandchildren, except for one thing. Our grandchildren are going to need to navigate the world as it is and as it is becoming. The covert side of the story and profits so elegantly omitted was deep and dangerous. How can the next generations build and preserve wealth if they are brought up to believe in cotton candy land? We all tend to think of ourselves as fundamentally good. It's our blind side. If it's good for me, it must be good because I'm good, right? So an autobiography is the story of I am good. Perhaps that's why we keep looking for a way to prove what is happening that is harmful to us is because, quote, they are bad. However, power comes by seeing the threads of all that is happening weave through our own lives and connect to our own actions. That connection is our point of power, where we can take action that shifts the course of history, where we have something to say about how history goes. Most of us fail to mention or think about the fact that most of our ancestors got the land we live on by genociding the people who were there first, or that our prosperity and capital have been amassed with the help of generations of warfare, slavery, and violent interventions in other people's lives and fortunes globally. While I hear many people complain about the wrongs done to them by others, I rarely hear anyone calculate the restitution they should be making from their capital to those who lost it through criminal means. There is, of course, the shifting of a portion of capital to do good works, which more often than not are tax-sheltered ways of keeping the do-gooders busy that affirm the establishment and make sure it stays in control. For many years, I believed that philanthropy was the criminal's way of coming back around and requiring the children of the people they had just destroyed to affirm their story of I am good in exchange for a few places in that machine. It was not until I was much older that I discovered that America is full of hardworking people who earn their money honestly and are remarkably generous with it. Indeed, their hard work and generosity has kept much going in the midst of the greater game of I am good. If old line wasps want to stay on top through the generations, we are going to need to rethink our approach to education. If we don't, the sons and daughters of Russian mafia, Chinese triads, Japanese Yakuza, and Ukraine oligarchs will be running things, snatching the fortunes of our descendants as they burn through the family capital, trying to do deals in cotton candy land where they naively believe grandfather made his millions and lived happily ever after. As I said, if you're interested in reading the whole article, you can get the link at the related reading in the commentary. The fact that George H.W. Bush has passed from this earth is quite uplifting and inspiring for me. If you see my article, Meditations at the Crossroads, linked in the related reading at the commentary, it explains the fact that I believe that David Rockefeller, Dick Cheney, and George H.W. Bush were responsible for my mother's assassination in 1976, right after Bush was appointed head of the CIA and directed to clean up after the Church Committee. I doubt he was the driving force. He was simply implementing the list probably given to him after the Rockefeller Commission, which was appointed the administration's response to the Church Committee's work. And so what commissions like that often do is figure out how to kill the opposition, including literally killing the opposition. And sometimes that includes mothers and housewives. It took me till 2004 to conclude that that was so and to understand what probably happened. One was I was very severely poisoned after I wrote an open letter to Condoleezza Rice about 9/11. And then the second thing, we got a very slimy court decision in the litigation case, and it just so happened to be issued that year, several months later, on my mother's birthday, which I don't think was an accident. I attributed both incidents to Cheney for reasons that I've explained elsewhere, and I'm happy to do it again if anybody's interested. Anyway, the result, my whack back, and I used to always do this. I'd always dish out some dirt on the folks. I published Meditations at the Crossroads right after those two things happened. David Rockefeller's death early in 2017 left a bit of a power vacuum, but then now with Bush, who was clearly head of the deep state in the U.S., and if there was any doubt of that, you could, I think his funeral disabused all notions of it. If you think of the key decisions that get made every year at the Bohemian Grove, Bush, in my opinion, whether he was there or not, was the top dog. How do you get to be head of the deep state in 2018 in America? You were in on killing Kennedy. You were in on engineering drugs into our cities, opening up the U.S. markets to global narcotics trafficking after World War II, and the money laundering process you needed to then amass the fortune to build the multinational corporate juggernaut. You engineered the financial coup d'etat as part of that. You engineered 9/11 and the wars subsequent to both the Kennedy assassination and 9/11. And yet, if you did all those things, then you can have the most glowing of tributes, plenty of scripture, the biggest cathedral services, and the respect and adoration of all those who profited when you succeeded in engineering the red button and making sure it didn't get pushed. If you look at the people who gathered for Bush's memorial service in the Capitol, the people who died in the wars that followed the Kennedy assassination or 9/11 are seen as history's losers. The rich profits funded an establishment. They gather to affirm a vision which is so profoundly disassociated from the truth that they have truly entered a dystopic cotton candy land. At the Washington service, you had in the front row on the right the last four presidents, including President Trump and the first ladies. And then on the left, the Bush family, and President Bush, George W. Bush, sat on the left with his family, not with the presidents. There was some extremely strange behavior to watch. Clearly, the midnight things are happening, and the Clintons are increasingly becoming pariahs. The Carters seem to be avoiding the Clintons. After some initial polite talk with the Obamas, they seem to be avoiding the Clintons. And Trump, basically, the Trumps basically did not speak with the Clintons. And Hillary Clinton was clearly extremely hostile to the president. So you can tell there's no love lost there. It truly looks like, as you watch the body language, if you've ever seen a herd of cattle slowly or cows slowly move away from a diseased animal, it really began to look like Hillary Clinton is the diseased animal. Wouldn't it surprise me if the very poor turnout on the first launch of their speaking tour is confirming their weakness. So it was an interesting sight, because one of the questions is going to be on the Bush family operation and the financial coup d'etat. You know, are there going to be any people to take the fall? You have a lot of liabilities, and if you can wrap it all up and push it off on a fall guy, one or two fall guys, you know, the Bush family is probably better off. There's no way that the mantle of running the deep state will fall to one of the Bushes. So it's going to leave the Bush family. At the same time, they have rich financial plunder. The question politically is, who's going to be responsible for the liabilities? How are they going to protect their financial assets now in the period of the long knives? Given the pending indictment, something is up. So the logical candidates for Fall Guy right now are Hillary Clinton and Dick Cheney. I would note there's a new movie coming out on Cheney this month called Vice. You know, but we'll just have to see. There may be none, but given how much money has been stolen, and given how much the Midnight thing is happening, and given the pending indictments, I can't imagine something might not happen. Anyway, this clearly has a lot to do with the financial coup. David Rockefeller and Bush would have been at the top of that syndicate, not only that sort of ordered the shifting of the money out of the U.S. government, but directing the money and the investment flows. As I've said many times, my guess on the Clinton Foundation is that they were working in the syndicate essentially under Bush, laundering a piece of the funds that would be sent out and laundered back into the U.S. as donations, although I'm sure they were selling favors at the State Department as well. But it was a way of getting money into the pockets of all the members of the establishment that were helping doing the stealing. Everybody, certainly in Congress, who was willing to take something needed to get paid off. And I suspect this is part of what Mueller's effort is about, is to try and protect this. Now, what's so interesting is if you assume that Bush and his group were leading the financial coup, it's very interesting that at the very same time, the story of the $21 trillion missing from HUD and DOD was published in sort of a limited, modified hangout by The Nation by a reporter who's been working almost a year on it, so he's been working quite a while. It went through a lot of the different issues in sort of describing the history of the story that was very accurate, but then delivered the punchline, it's not real money, it's just a plug, is essentially what the gist of where he came out. This is an opinion for which there is no supporting evidence. Since there's no reliable books, there's no way to tell, you know, is $0 missing, or is $50 trillion missing, or is it $21 trillion? No one really knows for sure. I certainly am highly confident that it's a very significant amount of money, but the reality is no one can prove anything in a court of law, only that for three decades, the U.S. government, including DOD and HUD, have been in massive violation of the Constitution and all the laws. It's exactly what the chief of staff to the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee said to me, that HUD was being run as a criminal enterprise. The reality is you can't run HUD as a criminal enterprise unless the Department of Justice, Treasury, and the New York Fed member banks are running it as a criminal enterprise, which means the whole government is being run as a criminal enterprise. Anyway, unfortunately, the reporter got on NPR and then implied that Dr. Skidmore agreed with him that it really wasn't, you know, big money, which is simply factually not correct. Dr. Skidmore has been repeatedly on record that there is no way to tell if it's a lot or a little. Suddenly, a freshman congresswoman from New York, very young, tweets out the $21 trillion from the Nation article, and then in short order, the New York Times and Washington Post promptly publish articles about her mistake, of course, reiterating that, in fact, this is not real money. And all the conservatives pile into social media agreeing that she's a total idiot. And no one seemed to notice that they just, you know, the ball got thrown up, somebody hit it, and they all got suckered. You know, my opinion, it was an op. It was extremely well done. And it was very odd that the timing related to the funeral, because the Washington establishment then gathered at the National Cathedral to celebrate the man who'd made them wealthy on the false flags and wars. That was all part of the financial coup d'etat. So while they're celebrating the guy who stole the $21 trillion, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post are running an op to make sure everybody knows it's not real money. Well, if you look at the funeral of George H.W. Bush and the way everybody behaved, that's a lot of real money. The whole place reeked of a lot of money, trillions of dollars of money. So if you look at the complete hypocrisy of what I know to be the true record of what George H.W. Bush did to America, and if you look at the extraordinary ability of money and power and making people wealthy from that money and power, the ability it has to command the greatest respect and admiration of a society, it basically, the message is crime pays. I mean, the message, if you look at it, is, and if you just believe in being practical, if I believed in practical, I'd say, oh, well, let's go be a criminal because that's what works. Now, I don't feel that way, but here's the reality. Again, no nation can function productively, let alone lead globally, in a state of this kind of dysfunctional dissociation and mind control. It's one of the things that drives the world crazy about us, because we run around and kill everybody and violently make everybody do what we want, and then we stand up and make them affirm, you know, the story of we are good. It just, you know, that's why all this human rights yah-yah around the world just drove everybody crazy, just like it's driving everybody crazy here in America with the culture wars. And the whole thing rests on a platform of such expensive and intense secrecy. You know, and the secrecy is working in the United States, but it doesn't work globally. And so we're in real trouble. So America's a fascist country, and it's run by a deep state defined by secret societies and intelligence agencies. I don't like that, but that's the reality. With Rockefeller and Bush now dead, the question is, who's going to run the deep state? If Chuck Schumer says the president has to do what the CIA tells them, and the CIA's budget consists of 70% corporate contractors, so there's no real government, it's just a corporate infrastructure. The question is, who tells the CIA what to do? And that's the question. And of course, we keep talking about the deep state. It's why we're doing the interview series that we start tonight with Harry Blaser about the deep state and the reengineering of America. What that means is, again, with Rockefeller and Bush dead, big power vacuum opening up. And the question is, who's going to fill those shoes? It may not be one person. It could be two people. It could be essentially co-chairmans, it could be a committee. A lot at that level is done by small committees. We're heading into a major change in America, irregardless of who it is, but the choice of person and their close colleagues is going to set a tone. And so it's extremely important for the sort of the tone of how we go from here to there. Someone asked me today who I thought it would be, and I said, I really don't know. Then they asked me how I would like it to go, and I explained it in terms of sort of different groupings. It's looked to me that to outwit the Vatican, that the old WASPs and the Freemasons have basically teamed up with the Zionists, and that has significantly expanded the role and the power of the Zionists, particularly the Israelis. And the result of is the leadership in the Anglo-American Alliance in combination with the Zionists have embraced a level of criminality which I think is killing our culture And I think it's killing the goose that laid the golden egg, which is our leadership globally in the financial area. I would say that if we're going to have a shift in power in the deep state, the WASPs need to put the Zionists back in the box, and they need to revive a global brand. If you look at the wealth represented in the National Cathedral during the service yesterday, you saw a lot of people get rich by destroying America's brand globally. Now, I'm sure a lot of them would love to blame Trump, but it's not just Trump. So we've done tremendous harm to our global brand. And the question is, if we want a global brand that can support a global currency with something greater than just weapons, we need to go to work. And that means somebody needs to put Israel back in the box. Now, certainly the Masons have radically improved their power in America relative to the Vatican. In the process, they've created a world that is culturally and financially bankrupt. And I don't see how they win from here. But then I'm not looking at the same map they are. In every scenario that I can come up with about why they're doing what they're doing, it seems to me that the extent to which they embrace criminality and perversion is going to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. It's funny, one of the challenges I have doing the Saleri Report is that often people try and persuade me that I should get involved in advising the federal government or running for election in the federal government or taking an appointment in the federal government. And every time it happens, I realize that they really don't understand what I'm saying. And if I could encourage you to go back and watch several of the movies we've recommended. One is the remake of The A-Team. It was the movie of the year on the Saleri Report, I don't know, about 5 years back. I think it was made in 2010. Or watch the Last Bourne movie. I think it's the fourth in the series, the one with Matt Damon. And the message of the end of those movies is there is nothing to go back to. There is no federal government. There's a money laundering mechanism that has frightening enforcement powers. And if you look at what it's doing, it's basically taking our money and gifting it away to the banks and the big corporations in a way that creates every year more and more central control. But there is no federal government. I mean, what Chuck Schumer said is pretty honest. He said the president has to do what the CIA tells him to do. So that's going to get progressively more obvious over the next 3 years as the reengineering of America proceeds. And we're going to keep talking about that. Dr. Farrell and I will talk more in News Trends and Stories for the annual wrap-up. And Harry Blaser and I, as we continue this deep state, will get ever more into how things are going to be re-engineered. But there is nothing that I could do in working as an advisor or for the federal government or as an appointee in the federal government that will change anything. The thing I can do is do the Saleri Report and bring transparency in a way that can really help people navigate. The more people who shun and don't go along, the better off we can be. The situation with the money going missing from the federal government has really reached a new place. And it's very interesting that it should reach that place as Bush passes from the deep state scene. Because we saw Harvard Endowment, arguably the most powerful intergenerational pool of money in America, go dark with policies to basically outsource a lot of its money management. So kill the internal capacity, people who know the story, people who can see what they're making money on. You kind of wonder how much is done to protect disaster capitalism. But also, much less disclosure will be published and made public about what they're doing and how they're doing. So the Harvard Endowment goes dark. And now with the new Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board recommendations adopted, the Department of Defense, which therefore includes Treasury and the ESF, is also allowed to go dark. So they have secret books run by a secret process by a secret group of people who get to decide in secret what's going to be made public and what's going to be channeled into the secret, which means you're in complete defiance of the Constitution. You're in complete defiance of all the financial management laws. And what's interesting is if you understand exactly how that mechanism works, basically you're changing the entire governmental and governance model of the United States to a fascist model, and you're doing it by a Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board policy. Since when did they have the authority to change America from a constitutional republic to a fascist dictatorship? But there it is. Now, what this means is you have the entire treasury bond market is dark as a result of these policies. And then because the corporate contractors who do work for the military and the U.S. government and anything that would run through treasury, because they can get waivers that protect them from having to comply with the SEC system, you have both the stock market and the treasury bond market are now dark. And because you have so much intervention from the ESF and other places in the central bank, you have no pricing mechanism. So your financial statement transparency for both treasury bond and stock market is basically dark. Your biggest equity pool of capital that has a strategic leadership position in the governance of the country has gone dark. And now you're operating the markets without any pricing mechanism. So not only do you have a fascist government, but you have a fascist capital market. How's that supposed to work? Now, I think the plan is it's going to work by technocracy, but I must be lacking in imagination. I don't see how it's going to work. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're in cotton candy land, and it's quite amazing how we got here. And as you sit back and you watch the funeral of George H.W. Bush, you realize, can it possibly be that bad? And the answer is yes, it can. We have literally, as a country, lost our mind, and now we're in cotton candy land. Well, the long knives are out, and that's bad for the stock market. The tensions between the U.S. and China coming out of G20, the trade wars, that's weighing on the market. The tensions between the U.S. and Europe are weighing on the markets, and the tensions between NATO and Russia are weighing on the markets. So the markets are grumpy and correcting, and we know we're long overdue for a correction, so it's not necessarily a bad thing. The U.S. dollar now up 5.5% for the year. All this bad news in the market has been good news for the bonds. The long treasury ETF is only down 4.5% for the year. The intermediate's down almost 1% for the year. The bond aggregate's down a little bit more than 1% for the year. And junk is down 1.25% for the year. The only thing that's up across the board is the S&P, which is up at 2.44% for the year. VGK, the European ETF, is down almost 19%. U.S. home builders down 21%. That's an improvement from where we were. The developed markets minus North America is down 10.97%, almost 11% for the year. Germany down 19%. And then China down, the large caps down 9%. Speaking of large caps, Huawei, the largest telecommunication company, their CFO, who's the daughter of the founder, was arrested in Canada for extradition to the U.S. related to trades for Iran sanctions. Talk about an extremely serious situation designed to further exacerbate the deterioration of U.S.-China relations. That's one of them. The China small caps down almost 14.5%. And the emerging markets down 13.18%. Commodities off 5.02% for the year. Gold down 5.25%. Silver down 15%. And oil down 12.5%. What that means is across the board, stocks, bonds, commodities, gold and silver, everything is down this year except for the S&P index, which is basically up less than a good floating rate treasury note might be. So to say that we're in a time when cash looks like the most attractive is an understatement. We know the Fed's been talking about raising interest rates next week, and suddenly we see this week the chairman a little bit back off and say they're responding to data. We'll see what they do. I would have said until this week that the Fed was going to bump. That's what I would do if I were in their shoes, but we'll see what they do. Of course, the ECB is planning on ending its bond buying, and so, again, tightening in Europe and tightening in the U.S. A big article in the Financial Times this week that's very important. Let me just read the headline. Brussels sets out plans for euro to challenge dollar dominance. EU seeks stronger international role for single currency in face of Trump policies. Let me just read you some selected excerpts. Brussels has set out plans to increase the use of euro in strategic sectors such as energy, commodities, and aircraft manufacturing in a bid to challenge the dominance of the U.S. dollar as the world reserve currency. The European Commission will on Wednesday publish a blueprint to promote a stronger international role for the euro, saying policies pursued by Donald Trump have underlined the need to increase EU's economic sovereignty. In a draft seen by the Financial Times, Brussels will stress the need to act faced with recent challenges to international rules-based governance and trade, a veiled reference to the Trump administration's aggressive trade policies. Part of this is a response to the U.S. sanctions in Iran, and the French have put together a plan to create a special purpose vehicle that will allow corporations to trade around the SWIFT, I believe the SWIFT system, but everybody's looking for alternatives. As I said, I've said for the last 3 years, the use of the U.S. system, the payment system or the reserve currency to enforce financial sanctions was going to be a short-term strategy. Ultimately, what it was going to do was destroy the power and depth and liquidity of the dollar market, and that's exactly what it's doing. You almost wonder if that isn't the goal. Trump was supposed to meet with Putin at the G20 meeting. That got busted up by the little game in the Ukraine. I think that was one of the goals in the Ukraine, was to bust up that meeting. Instead, Putin helped to organize a summit with China and India. We're cut out. Meantime, now we see today or yesterday, NATO ships heading into a confrontation in the Black Sea, and just keeps getting worse. So between China, India, and Russia getting together, including on building liquidity away from the dollar, combined with Brussels doing the same, it seems to me that you've got both Asia and Europe getting organized to cut us and our currency out. What does that mean to you and me? It's going to mean inflation. All the stuff we buy from around the world is suddenly going to get much more expensive if the dollar is weak and starts to lose market share. Of course, so far it's strong this year. It's up 5% so far this year. And there's a real danger in the emerging markets that they're in a dollar trap. But again, all these different sort of strong arm engineering things with financial dirty tricks or financial sanctions help short run. It's not clear to me that they help long run. The Brits have their hands full with Brexit. May is having difficulty getting her current deal approved, and it looks as though you could literally come into March ready to do a hard Brexit. And the question is, it looks like the EU is holding out hope that rather than do a hard Brexit, you can do an Article 50 withdrawal. So they withdraw from proceeding with Brexit. Of course, there's talk about holding a new referendum. I don't know which way they'll go. It really looks like a governmental process that's struggling to deal with the complexity of it. And so whether they adopt this or a related, something similar agreement, if they have to go back to the EU, or do a hard Brexit, or do an Article 50 withdrawal, May seriously got a very difficult situation on her hands. It's a bit of a mess. Ohio becomes the first state to take Bitcoin for tax payments. That's as Bitcoin is broken through the 4,000 line. It's trading about 3,700. If it stays below 4,000, that's a very significant breakdown. The NAFTA replacement negotiation agreement has gone into effect. There's some concern that it's going to compromise independent media again, and I have not had a chance to look at it. But if anybody has any analysis on that, I'd sure appreciate it. Okay, clearly one of the top stories of the year is the California fires. There's a real effort now on the internet to get more and more pictures up, and it's very, very helpful. I think sort of watching physically the different fact patterns and what's happening is very important. And of course, given what happened in Paradise, which to me looks like very significant genocide. So I've been saying for a while that I thought this was thermal gentrification. No, now it's thermal warfare. This is very dangerous. Anyway, but I think more and more people are learning to discuss the and sort of ask and answer the question, cui bono, which is making money. How are people making money on this? And the more people who ask that question, the more things are going to start to make sense. As I said 2 weeks ago in the last money market, I believe very confidently that a lot of the mortgage fraud is being written down into the federal government funds, and that combined with sucking money out on disaster recovery. Some group in California is amassing a tremendous amount of money, and it wouldn't surprise me if part of it related to getting the high-speed train built. So I just think there's some very dirty money flows going on here. And it's important that sort of on an open intelligence basis we share. Now, the bells really rang. I did a show with Dr. Dave Janda. Both Skidmore and I did them essentially on the missing money. Skidmore did went first and then I went second. We put up a link, and we meant to put up a link to the individual interviews, and we ended up with a link to the full 3 hours. He does a 3-hour show with, I think, 6 guests. Anyway, and they very sort of with it subscriber said, hey, you better listen to the one that went before Skidmore. I think there's a problem. So I went in and listened. And among other things, Janda promoted the notion that Iranian sleeper cells were doing the arson. It's so bad, you don't even know what to say. So I wrote him a note and I said, Dave, are you prepared to explain how the Iranian sleeper cells are getting the U.S. military to stand down? So this is akin to, you know, I grew up in an African-American neighborhood and I spent the first 20 years of my life listening to basically CIA design propaganda saying that, you know, black teenagers were running the whole narcotics trafficking in the United States. And the U.S. military and the Department of Justice Enforcement and the FBI were helpless to stop them. They're so clever. But then the ones that always work is the foreigners. You know, it's on the war on terror, it's the foreigners. Anyway, so I tried to give Dr. Dave a hard time about it. But why would you start to hear the typical 100-year-old propaganda about, ooh, the foreigners did it? You would hear that because they're scared that people are starting to really figuring out the money side of this. So my message is, and I'm now calling the California fires 9/11 West. My message is, let's dig in and figure out as much about who's making money on this and how they're making money. To understand the reengineering of America that's upon us and is coming, it's very important, I think, to go read 2 entries on Wikipedia. I put them up at News Trends and Stories this week, but you can just go to Wikipedia. Read the Phoenix Program. Phoenix is the PHOENIX, the Phoenix Program, and another on thermal warfare. So I would strongly recommend you take a look at those 2, because I think what we're watching certainly roll out in California is some version of the Phoenix Program. And if you look at how they put the fusion centers and sort of laid out the bureaucracy across the country, it looks to me very much like a much more sophisticated version of the Phoenix Program. But this time it's done as a sort of an info war, not as much a physical war, although clearly the arson, the thermal warfare is. I noted this 2 weeks ago, but I want to stress it again. The FDIC and the OCC are proposing that for mortgages up to $400,000, that we no longer require human appraisals. It's all going to be done by software that clearly, because it works so well. What could possibly go wrong? Anyway, what is this? They're cutting out the local guys. So you know, this was destined to happen. As soon as they got all the appraisers to go along with the pump and dump, then they had the basis of getting them all cut out. Anyway, as I've said before, when the other day when FHA announced that they had a $14 billion hole because of problems with the appraisal, I don't think that's true. I think that $14 billion hole is transferring the surplus out of FHA and, you know, into the mortgage fraud that's being written down in connection with a variety of things, including the California fires. Amazon, who announced their new headquarters is going to be split between right next to Langley and the Treasury Department and right next to the New York Fed, what a surprise, has now done a deal with Lockheed for use of Lockheed satellites. Now, this marries the single largest government contractor and defense contractor, in fact, that ran all the IT systems at DOD and part of the time at HUD when the $21 trillion went missing. This puts them deeply into bed with Amazon. Now, if you're going to re-engineer the U.S. government all into the systems, who are you going to use? You're going to use Lockheed for the military and the IT. You're going to use Amazon for the retail, and you're going to use JPMorgan Chase for the banking. They're going to be the lead New York Fed depository. Now, the big question with Amazon now in bed with Lockheed and now positioning their headquarters, you know, in the perfect places for a major federal government reengineering, the question is who gets the JEDI contract, which is a $10 billion DOD cloud contract. There's a big hullabaloo. GAO just put down a protest from Oracle about Oracle complaining that there was only going to be one company chosen. Now it looks like IBM is also going to contest that now that Oracle's been beaten back. And I think everybody smells a big Amazon win, which is what I smell too. Deutsche Bank was raided earlier this week. There's lots of talk about it. And my question is how much of what they were searching for related to getting some goods on Trump, who's used Deutsche Bank as a bank, or his son-in-law or his kids. But I think they're after Trump. But another is with the economy slowing, you have increased competition over dirty money. It's a market share battle. And finally, the question is how much of it relates to Brexit, which is very possible, or it could be all three. But again, the politics, we now have politics and political competition fighting through law enforcement and criminal indictments in courts. It's getting ever more risky and dangerous. Under the category, you think you had a bad day, Mr. Macron in France has really got his hands full. His approval rating is now down to 18%. There have been huge major protests over his effort to implement the first part of a gas tax. The justification is climate change, which is clearly not working. The French know, put it this way, the climate change scam is not selling in France. His new nickname is the President of the Rich, which I think is richly deserved. There are more protests coming, even though Macron has canceled the gas tax. So one of my questions is to what extent is the protest real or engineered? If it's France, it could be real. And they're clearly very big. If you look at where they're headed with all the climate change engineering, I just think there's going to be incredible pushback. The sales pitch doesn't work in part because you're basically forcing anyone who lives in the suburbs or the rural areas to move into the city and turn their car in for a bike. The transhumanist pylon, I don't know what happened. It was if somebody threw a switch after the election and said, okay, we're free to start talking about these things. But let me just read the headlines that I've noticed the last week in the transhumanist category. It's really the last 2 weeks since the last Money in Markets. One, the FDA is now getting in position to regulate, are you ready for this? Lab-grown meat. What could possibly go wrong? You walk into a supermarket. How do you tell if the meat is real or grown in a lab? I don't know if we're going to be able to. So I'm just telling you, you need to know your rancher, know your farmer. University of California has grown human brains in the lab. They're using them for brain testing. However, they are emitting waves. That means they're in our field. What could possibly go wrong, right? There's a new opioid drug being released that is 1,000 times stronger than anything that's on the market, as if we needed something 1,000 times stronger. Pretty frightening. Celine Dion, the singer, has teamed up with a group of Israeli designers and come out with a clothing line for children, which is basically satanic and gender neutral. There's one pajama where the pants have human skulls all over them. It's so creepy, you can't even imagine it. A scientist announced that twin girls had been born who had their genes edited by the scientist. It was the first example of gene editing. Shortly thereafter, the scientist has now disappeared. Makes you wonder. Hong Kong is now apparently what it used to be. A woman has now given birth to a child who was transferred, whose uterus was transplanted from a dead woman. So this is the first example of a successful fetus transfer. And finally, pig hearts are now being readied for transplants to human. Okay, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, just in the last 2 weeks. You just look at it. Someone said to me tonight, it's just like Jupiter Ascending. There's a movie called Jupiter Ascending where it shows you how creepy things can get. But I think it's very important to decide where your lines are and draw them. And to a certain extent, I hope to ignore most of this. I do think it underscores why I'm very concerned that I think genetic testing is dangerous. I don't think you necessarily want the establishment having a clear picture of your genes. Several more stories I wanted to mention. We continue to see an outpouring of information on AI. And again, I think it's moving very fast. So I want you to make sure before the end of the year, or at the end of the year in January, sometime in the next couple of months, you really pick up AI superpowers. I think it's a great introduction. But keep an eye on AI and what it might mean to your business. There's a new book review up on the website for Tucker Carlson's new book, Ship of Fools. I note in the review that I tend to look at the deep movements. You know, I'm very focused on the deep, big movements on money, like pension funds, like space-based economy, like the rise of the Asian consumer. And I tend to view the culture wars as just a tactic by the leadership, you know, rather than try and explain to you why they're stealing all your money. It's much easier to just attack you over transgender bathrooms. You know, the best defense is a good offense. And so it's a way of putting everybody, you know, putting the general population on the defense instead of you getting on the defense. And it gets, of course, quite ridiculous and quite silly. And then you load on the entrainment and mind control. Everybody takes it seriously. So I tend to just ignore it and not take it seriously. So, but this entire book is on the cultural wars. And now that I've really reading how bad it's gotten, I realize, okay, we clearly have to take this seriously, as Dr. Farrell is always known to remind me. Anyway, it's very informative, very entertaining. I liked it immensely, but you can check out the review if you're interested. Finally, wonderful ally Jason Bowden Smith sent me a videotape of him giving a speech by hologram. He's working with a group that creates the equipment and technology you need to basically go give a, you know, instead of flying halfway around the world, just give your speech through a hologram. It's quite remarkable. Anyway, it's ready to roll out with 5G, and it looks very realistic. Needless to say, the applications in terms of false flags and fake news is just on and on and on. It's frightening, but holograms are here, so you might want to check out what's happening there as well. Our hero this week is Carolyn Rose Hunt. Carolyn Rose Hunt was one of the Hunt children. I think at one point she was the wealthiest woman in America. She, among many other good works, developed a chain of wonderful hotels. I used to always stay at them in Dallas, and they were simply remarkable. And you thought, this is what can happen if a woman can get a hold of the control of developing the world's finest hotel. It was really remarkable. Anyway, she developed them and sold them, I think, for a very nice profit. She did amazing good works in Dallas and by reputation was just a remarkable example of what can happen to a person who has resources but stays very grounded and very connected to the humanity around her. Anyway, a very remarkable woman. I wish I had met her. And one of the reasons I wanted her to be the hero is I just wanted to remind everybody that the people who love freedom are everywhere. They're in every kind of group and every kind of economic background, and they're to be found, you know, sort of their allies everywhere. I'll never forget one day when I was working on customer service many years ago for the Salera Report, and the first person I helped was a person who was homeless, who was reading us from the library and wanted to know if they could have a complimentary subscription because they were homeless and would try and become a paid subscriber if they could just dig out and get a job and work. The other, and of course, I gave them a complimentary subscription. And then the second customer was an entrepreneur who had just sold their company, of which they were the sole owner, for hundreds of millions of dollars. And I thought, see, you know, the people who love freedom and want to have a free and inspired life are everywhere. Harry and I cover the period from World War II through the end of the Eisenhower years in our discussion, The Deep State. So we wanted to choose Oliver Stone's movie, JFK. We start to get into the Kennedy assassination, but we'll go into it deeper in probably part two. JFK is Oliver Stone's very excellent film on the Kennedy assassination and the efforts by New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison, who to me is one of the great heroes of the 20th century in the United States, to establish that the assassination was a conspiracy and to prosecute some of the co-conspirators. What's interesting is now if you look at the work of Colonel Fletcher Prouty, Peter Janney, who wrote Mary's Mosaic, and we had him on the Salera Report, David Talbot, who wrote The Devil's Chessboard, which we've also had on the Salera Report, and then Douglas, who wrote Unspeakable. If you take those four books, plus JFK the movie, we know what happened. You know, it's pretty, the Kennedy assassination has been absolutely figured out, if you will. And what's amazing is yesterday in the funeral, Bush's funeral in Washington, all of Washington paid tribute and honor to one of the remaining perpetrators of that assassination. So Kennedy's dead, and the people who killed Kennedy are dead, and the democracy they destroyed is, for all intents and purposes, dead. But the fascism and inequality they created lives on, and we gathered yesterday as a nation to pay respect to the people who did that. Again, we're in cotton candy land, but it reminds me of the quote from Shakespeare, "The evil that men do lives after them. The good is oft interred with their bones. So let it be with Caesar." My interview tonight is with Harry Blaser on the deep state and the reengineering of America. I have been talking regularly over the last year about my thoughts of how an effort is going to make to radically re-engineer the U.S. government, particularly after the 2020 election. I've done several reports with Dr. Farrell several years ago about who and what is the deep state, and obviously gone into that a lot in my discussions with him as well as Richard Dolan. But I thought there's so much misunderstanding about what the deep state is and how it works that I thought I would do it again with Harry, and we'd go through with a focus on the nuts and bolts mechanisms, legal and financial and operational. So that helps to tee up the reengineering, and I'm hoping whichever way the reengineering goes, it'll help make it easier for you to see it. And this is a very important topic, and I think the more I can help you see the history of it, you can't understand what's happening today unless you can see and really feel the history. And seeing and feeling that history makes everything make a lot more sense. It's very hard to make sense of cotton candy land unless you have an understanding of those deep mechanisms. And I love kind of figuring these things out and sleuthing these things out with Harry. We have fun doing it. So we start in tonight's interview with the passage of the national security state and the creation of the CIA, and then go through the end of the Eisenhower administration. And again, our chief source is Fletcher Prouty. If you haven't read Fletcher Prouty, I strongly recommend to him. He's one of the best sources for the early years of the deep state. Ask Catherine. I got a request, several requests for Christmas gift ideas, so I wrote a commentary. It's too long to do an Ask Catherine, and you can check it out on the, it's on the homepage under By Catherine, as well as under What's New. Then a long note from a wonderful subscriber who listened to our interview in 5G and went out and hired a certified electromagnetic radiation specialist to come and review her home and had terrific results. It's a fabulous piece. I'm going to put it up in the commentary, but I added it in the Ask Catherine notes, and I would encourage you to read it. She purchased a book. Was it by the specialist she hired? Yes. She hired the International Institute for Building Biology and Ecology. I guess her specialist was certified by them. Anyway, and there's a book, Expose the Electronic Sickening of America and How to Protect Yourself, Including Dangers of 5G and Smart Devices. Anyway, so it sounds like a very good experience, and I think if you read it, it might inform whether or not you want to do that as well. And I'm hoping to put that up as a, also as a commentary next week. Catherine, the rise of the Asian consumer states the average IQ of people in Hong Kong and Singapore is 108, China and Japan is 105, Italy is 102, and U.S. is 98. Question, do you think the environment consuming legal and illegal drugs and eating GMO foods affect intelligence of a human being? Absolutely. The constant, and that's me, absolutely. The constant message to Americans over many years by the government media focusing on topics that cause fear and stress may be intentional, not just for profits, fear sells, but for control of people. Yes, absolutely. If it is true, epigenetic changes in the DNA is transferred to several future generations. Will that create a caste system, especially in the inner cities? Yes, I believe that is highly likely. Catherine, what in the world happened to General Electric? That's a great question. I haven't paid attention to General Electric, but it's on my list. I would love to know what happened there. It's quite dramatic. I listened to an interview with a Saker in which you reference a paper you read by a Swiss money manager on the subject of price discovery. You state the paper was posted on your website, but I cannot locate it. I sent you the link, as I wasn't going to do Ask Catherine last week. So I sent you the link. But for anyone else who would want to know, it's in the third quarter wrap-up, the equity overview and the related reading links. Dear Secretary Fitz, thank you so much for your tireless work on our behalf. As with all great souls, your actions reflect that deepest caring underlying all things, such as the way of true integrity so desperately needed in for our time. And then, again, this is long, so I'm not going to read it, but you talk about the importance of making things sort of fun and entertaining. And I agree absolutely. There's a lot more that could be done to make the real deal entertaining. And, you know, Hollywood's very smart, and we could use those skills as well. So I agree with that. And the question is, where did the resources come to implement it? They're richly capitalized, and we're not necessarily so. But I will constantly think about how to integrate that in. One team that does a great job on a low budget is TrueStream Media, and it's one of the reasons I've tried to promote their work and would love to do more with them because I think they're quite good at doing that. Then you suggested that Fitz and Farrell should run for political office. And I just have to mention that would be an absolute waste of Fitz and Farrell's time. We can bring transparency, and the more people who support us, the more transparency we could bring. But if we went to Washington, we would simply stop bringing transparency, and nothing would be accomplished. Again, I would encourage you to watch that A-Team movie or the Last Bourne movie in the Bourne series, because they explain you can't you know, you can't go back again. The one thing I would note on some of the disinformation that you brought up, that disinformation was much more richly capitalized than people like Farrell and Fitz. And in fact, if you look at who capitalized that operation, basically you had Gaia TV, which is funded by some of the biggest treasury investors in the world, including Fidelity and Vanguard. So you're talking about real capital supporting those efforts, you know, and so if you're piling out disinformation, a lot of times you get the capital, whereas if you're piling out the truth, instead you get headwinds. I've said many times in the Slayer report, I estimate that my overhead is about $100,000 higher a year just dealing with shadow work and headwinds. So anyway, but I agree with you absolutely. The more entertaining we can be, the better. Catherine, I watched your recent video with Greg Hunter and enjoyed it as usual. I always appreciate your insight and information. I try to understand the world we live in with the information I can access and at the time I have to absorb and understand it. Still, I'm perplexed and irritated by all the noise. You and me both. It's like a weather forecast, unpredictable at best. A few thoughts in no particular order. It would seem we live in a world where nothing is as it seems. Lobbyists, politicians, corporatism, media monopolies, dark money, central banks, Wall Street, algorithms, derivatives, manipulated data, lack of manufacturing, ineffective education, declining work ethic, limited rule of law, globalism. One of the things I would just remind you is we, you know, our great-grandparents or grandparents lived in a world where knowledge doubled every 150 years. And we're moving into a world where knowledge doubles literally every year. Someday it's going to double every day. So part of new information technology is it increases the learning metabolism, not only in every neighborhood and every sector and every industry, but between all of those. So it radically increases the learning metabolism, which I think causes the kind of feelings you describe. Some say an economic crash is imminent. Others say it has a while to go. It would mirror the crash of the Soviet system or just be a minor setback. Will government change how it operates? And if it does, how will it affect us? Should more global conflict be expected? Ukraine, etc. Good investing will increase asset value, or is FANG responsible for the market? Are precious metals a good store of value? Are precious metals for fools to be confiscated and taxed? Cash king, or is another unbacked depreciating paper asset? Would cryptocurrency be part of the banking future? What purpose does it currently serve? Derivatives, I don't know what to say about them, but I believe they're a problem. Land, cash markets, bond, bank accounts, retirement plans are a store of value. Or are they in a bubble, overvalued, and potentially waiting to be confiscated? I think of Greece. Sealed indictments as unconcerned general population, the red button theory, when all else fails, will they take you to war, the price of weekly groceries? How can anyone with any degree of accuracy correctly forecast or safeguard his or her future in this reality? Okay, so so you've shown the complexity and the uncertainty. I think the first thing you need to do is ignore the noise and focus on the primary trends. So life marches on, and there are deep, long-lasting trends that we can count on. So, you know, for the last 20 years, I've been talking about the slow burn. That's a primary trend. It's sort of monetary and fiscal policy designed to squeeze the middle class with sort of sneaky inflation. That's a primary trend. The rise of the Asian consumer is a primary trend. Space-based economy is a primary trend, and on and on and on. But I think you have to stick with the primary trends. And just be careful that there's no magic bullet. In some scenarios, gold does well. In some scenarios, it doesn't do well. So that gets back to balance and diversification. So then you write, I hold metal, keep money in the bank, stay out of the market, hope property values won't drop and taxes won't increase. I don't see any other place to live that makes any more sense. Hopefully Social Security will be around and keep me from living under a bridge. Although I hear Arizona is nice. I mean, a small construction company. I work when people repair or expand their homes or offices to make this work. I take on a fair amount of risk and liability. I keep a zero balance on my business credit card and pay it off weekly. In spite of this, my interest rate increased from 11% to 24% this year. Wow, you may want to look for a new credit card or call up your credit card company and negotiate. Look for a new credit card and tell them, threaten to leave if they don't drop your rate back down. The other thing is, why not work out a letter of credit with a good bank or credit union, because you can probably beat those rates. The money I have in the bank sits idle and depreciates with respect to inflation. You should be able to get some very high quality floaters that, or a better rate. It depends on the bank or the situation, but you should be doing better than nothing, especially with rates rising. It's worth keeping an eye. The other thing is, if you have a community loan fund that's very well managed in your area, some areas do, and I've had lots of subscribers who, you know, got a very attractive rate sort of working with the local community loan fund. So you may want to check that out. I could lever it to build something else or restructure the business the way I do. But I'm not comfortable predicting next year's valuation when I have no idea about what business will look like next year. What am I missing? No, I don't think you're missing anything. I would say, the one thing I would say is, if you're in the construction business, are there opportunities to build equity positions that would give you long-term rental income in what you're doing with the in the real estate area? So I think that's worth considering keeping an eye out for. So then we get, I'm sure this is nothing new to you. From what I've read, the Miami Herald has done several articles. One remark says they've waited 10 years to publish the story. Hopefully the Clintons will not get a pass. So far he has. What about all the innocent children? Then it's a headline on the Jeffrey Epstein case, which is a very important and interesting case. If you see, there's a lot more going on here that meets the eye, including things that aren't in that article. But I did a review of Conchita Sarnoff's book review on the Epstein thing called Traffic King, K with a capital K. I think the Epstein operation was probably, believe it or not, like the Clinton Foundation. My theory is they were financed from the initial missing money that got pulled out of HUD, believe it or not. And I think the whole idea of the Epstein operation was to build a control file operation to support the money laundering that the Clinton Foundation was doing. And it was probably, for some period of time, pretty successful. The next one, does Solari have any group trips in the works for 2019? I'm in California, and I would love to come to one of your teas sometime as well. We are going to try a hang in Stavoren for a week in March 2019. Stavoren is in Friesland in the Netherlands, and so we'll announce it sometime later this month. The hope is that I'm going to be there. Ulrich Groniger is going to be there, who does our Future Science series. Robert Duper, who does our videos, is going to be there. And we're going to invite other people, and it's going to be a very informal hang. The people who come, come. They're the people who are supposed to be there. And we're going to have lots of coffees in the morning, good conversations, and free to run around and do whatever we want, but try and have meals together and have great conversations and time together. So I'm very much looking forward to that. Anyway, more on that soon. This man knows the Department of Justice as well as you do. Do you believe the Mueller level of corruption can be brought, I think he means stopped, to justice? Anyway, you give a link on a whistleblower related to justice. The Department of Justice is managing for the deep state. They're managing the economic model the way it is, including all the criminality. And you can't change the Department of Justice unless you change the fundamental model, including the culture. So if we're going to run the U.S. in a way that's highly dependent on welfare and highly dependent on the cash flows of organized crime, then you need the Department of Justice to be in the business, as I believe they are, of the control and concentration of cash, as opposed to run clean. You can't run a dirty model clean, or a clean agency can't run a dirty model. Just doesn't work. That's how we got to where we are. So it's a much bigger fundamental problem than just the DOJ. Hi, CAF. I don't know if you have this in your archive. I came across mention of it in a Jimmy Dore clip, then found the article about it. And it's about how the West had sort of, how American advisors had helped Yeltsin win. Yeah, no, I know about that. We've talked a lot about with that, including with Ann Williamson on the Solari report. Thanks again for another brilliant interview with Bill Binney and Kirk Wiebe. My question is, in your travels around the world, particularly in the Five Eyes country, What sort of person do you find has the healthiest attitude to climate change? Religious folks, small to medium business owners, any other category you can identify? I ask because the public rhetoric around the issue is starting to get a little scary in Australia, probably the same as in the U.S. I'm not committed to one position or another. Sure, maybe industrial pollution has greater influence on the climate than deliberate military intervention, but how do I identify those prepared to have a reasonable discussion on the issue? What you're looking for, if you gather all the people that we at Solari sort of get together who are pretty knowledgeable about climate change, they're independent, they're open-minded, they're typically very intelligent and responsible. They have a way of generating income that permits them to think and speak freely, which is not everybody. They seem to be more immune to the entrainment and mind control technologies. They're not people, they never watch TV. Often they've had the system sting them in a way that helped wake them up. Either they had a vaccine injury in their family, somebody, or they got burned by financial fraud, or they grew up in a family that was gave them a window into the deep state and the criminality. You know, they had somebody in the mafia, et cetera. So they either had entree to the covert side, or they had they were stung by it. And anyway, so they're. And they're also very capable of being, operating independently of the herd. So no memory wipes. Anyway, I find it very hard to categorize them by any particular, way of looking or being or where they come from or their, small business versus whatever. Certainly, anybody's got a big job for the government at a federal or national level or a big corporation is going to be not free to talk. So they're transactionally dependent on not bucking the sort of socially acceptable lines on climate change. Now, I find finding these people, other than having luncheons for subscribers, I have no way. I don't know how to find people. But you basically plug into a network like Solari of people who are independent-minded, and then you network out from there, and that's kind of how it goes. Dear Catherine, first I want to express my appreciation to you as a part of my daily life. After listening with Thomas Meyer concerning how to get like-minded people together, I suggest you have a travel section similar to the idea of the New York Times travel and cruises, but with different goals. I think that's a great idea. I'd love to do that. I would love to have the resources to sort of travel around the world as I do, but also somebody going alongside me organizing these hangouts. It would be great. We're going to try it and see if it works. I can assure you that I will be joining all of them. Thank you again for what you do. Well, I'll go take a closer look at what New York Times does. But as you know, I love to travel and intend to spend a lot of time traveling. And, it's a big world out there. There's so many amazing places and people. And I just really get a thrill out of learning about all of it. Anyway, so that's a really great idea. It's absolutely going into the parking lot. And, I'm gonna see what we can do with that. I really appreciate it. Hi, Catherine. I'd love to know if you are following this. It's quite a ride over here in crypto world. Certainly some hope of change. I hope you're well. Thanks for your diligent work. Then it's a story about an organized campaign against one of the currencies. It doesn't surprise, I'm not following it, but it doesn't surprise me at all. I expected whether enforcement, taxes, or litigation, the long knives to come out in cryptocurrency in a big way, particularly as soon as it fell. And I thought it would be after the election because they were using so much money from the cryptocurrencies to launder into activists or campaigns. It's what it looked like to me. So, in fact, it started a little bit earlier than I expected. So, it's not surprising at all. If you haven't listened to Bitcoin and Op, we discuss a little bit of it there. Catherine, I watched your recent interview with Greg Hunter. If in it you stated from an investment standpoint you like operating companies, you only mentioned railroads in a very general way. Please give me an example of other operating companies that you believe should be considered for investment, especially during the downtimes in the market that many of us are expecting to see soon. So I'm thinking of things. What I mean by an operating company is a company that does some useful function, but can produce and generate enduring revenues, profits, and dividends. I don't make investment recommendations on the Salieri Report, but occasionally we do provide stock lists in different areas when we dive deep into a topic. So if you look at our Global Harvest Wrap-Up, we have a list of all publicly traded agriculture and food and food-related businesses. In space-based economy, we do the same for space-related stocks, stocks with businesses or parts of their business which are focused on space. And then in megacities, we do global real estate companies and REITs and other related. Megacities is pretty timely, though. I just was looking at an AI study that somebody sent me, and that shows for the most recent 20 years, U.S. REITs outperforming gold in the S&P. So REITs have traditionally been a way to get yield in a world where it's hard to get interest rates, to get dividends. Anyway, but by operating companies, I just mean, you know, a company that does the work of the world, and it could be in any sector. So I've always liked railroads because they're pretty basic, and they if they run well, they produce a nice dividend. Anyway, so check out, I would say if you're interested, check out the table presses we do for Global Harvest, space-based economy, and this current one, Megacities. Somebody sends in scary stuff, and then an article from the Washington Post on technology that uses artificial intelligence to scan babysitter applicants. Yes, it's very scary. I'm very glad I work for myself. Hello, Catherine. Great interview. You mentioned, and I should just point out, I put that link into the news, trends, and stories. It's the title has Wanted Perfect Babysitter Must Pass AI Scan. Respect attitude. Hello, Catherine. Great interview. You mentioned above a book, Global Spraying by Dane Whittington. No, it wasn't a book. It was a website. And if you go to USA Watchdog with Greg Hunter, Dane regularly interviews with Greg Hunter on Global Spring, so you can find it there as well. Hi, CAF and Salieri team. Hope you're well. One more thing to be thankful, a courageous young woman who called out the bias of the DNC and quit her position there and regularly calls out warmongers. That profile is not what I would expect from Fox News. A positive report on Tulsi Gabbard. She criticized Obama for alliance with ISIS, the only voice in Congress speaking out against illegal wars by POTUS. Now Trump's alliance with Saudi Arabia. Obama's cozy with him, too. She doesn't use exaggerated theatrical poses and facial expressions to get across her points, nor does she endorse sleazy politicians like Andrew Cuomo or Nancy Pelosi. I had no idea she started in politics. At the age of 21, it's amazing she has prevailed in this corrupt political environment. Yes, I've regularly posted some of her interviews and find her to be a very impressive and intriguing congresswoman. You know, even though I think the system really locks people in, it's difficult to get anything done there. I think the higher quality of the person you have, the better off we all are. Okay, that's it for Ask Catherine. Thank you again for your questions. If you have questions, remember to post them on either the commentary for Money and Markets for that week, or just email them to askcatherine@salieri.com. Coming up next week, December 13th, Bridget Mouchet is bringing us her next wellness episode on longevity. It's very inspiring. It's a doctor from Chicago who really knows her stuff, and I'll tell you more about it when I talk about the interview next week. Then we dive into the best of 2018, which is the 2 weeks we do at the end of December. The first one, we collect up all the wrap-ups and present them together. It's really marvelous. And it gives you a chance before the year is out to really make sure you've gotten all the juice out of the wrap-ups. And then the second week, which will be December 27th, or the second week of Best of 2018, we'll have our four favorites of the weekly interviews. If you want to express a preference or a candidate, just send it to Ask Catherine. Again, we want to spend those 2 weeks just making sure you get the very best of the Salieri Report from that year. I don't do Money in Markets during those are really the Christmas holidays, because I'm deep working on the annual wrap-up, which will start rolling out the first week of January. Will be News, Trends, and Stories with Dr. Farrell, Part 1, and then Second Week, Part 2, then the Equity Overview, and then the Big Theme. We'll announce the Big Theme when we publish our cover. We're very famous for the annual wrap-up posters. I did a whole series of interviews in Europe, which I'll be publishing as special reports in December and January. So look for more for Dr. Catherine Horton and Thomas Meyer and some other wonderful guests who are going to be new to the Salieri Report. So special reports coming as well. So until next week with our wellness episode on longevity, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.